Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
In our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know.
No.
Talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, he's going to make it happen.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, make sure you drop it there. We're going to do a full mailbag on Wednesday, include all of your voicemails as well. So if you've got something pressing to talk about, definitely hit us up there, 331-979-1369. Welcome back from the weekend, Matt. Two very, very, very different games we watched for the Bulls over the weekend. One against a not-so-great Suns team, and then the other against a, say borderline average Wizards team, and Bradley Beal putting up a career-high 53. But before we get to the good news, let's talk about the bad game. But before we do all of that, how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Looking forward to getting through another week of the Bulls season. I feel like we're starting to get to seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and the light is just this season being over. Not a very pretty back-to-back, but at least in both of these games, we saw some really fun stuff from Coby White. So, I mean, I was disappointed but not surprised that the Bulls once again coughed up a sizable lead. They had that 17-point lead against Phoenix, and then, hey, guess what? One of those ugly third quarters reared its ugly head again. So disappointing but not surprising.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I know I want to spend a chunk of time on a lot of the positives, because like you had mentioned, Coby White, this is kind of a breakout weekend for Coby White, as well as Zach LaVine breaking a Bulls record too. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's start with this Phoenix game. You brought it up. I mean, this is classic, right? Coming out of All-Star weekend, figuring when are the Bulls going to repeat what they've done for the entire first half of the season, is blowing late game leads. And sure enough, we saw again this weekend the same thing happened. Turnovers seem to be an issue over the last, over the last 10 games or so, especially with your main ball handlers, and it killed the Bulls in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, like, it was just a turnover fest. I mean, both of these games were pretty ugly, but specifically against Phoenix, I think the Bulls had, what, like 25 or 26 turnovers. And, that's always been an issue with Zach, because I think, we would, for the most part, agree that he's not ideally suited to be a primary ball handler kind of player. And it leads to a lot of turnovers. Coby White has been very effective, but also because he's young, inexperienced rookie, he's also going to have some turnovers. He had 5 off the bench against Phoenix. I mean, the funniest part to me is that Felicio was credited with 4 turnovers against the Suns on Saturday. Dude played 23 minutes. How does a center have 4 turnovers when the dude barely, all he does is set screens that go nowhere? How does he get 4 turnovers?
Well, you could even tell too in the game last night. Every time a Bulls player had to pass to him on like a pick and roll or something, they were like, oh shit, he's going to probably turn it over or something. He's like, everybody is very hesitant to pass the ball to Felicio. And I don't know how you get credited with 4 turnovers as a center. It's clear that the dude has butterfingers too. Seems like he's very anxious out there when he's got the ball, when he does have an opportunity to have the ball. But yeah, again, I mean, you come out of the second half and you let Phoenix drop 36 on you. That's terrible. I mean, we've talked about it over and over again, whether it's the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter or it's the start. It's the first 8 minutes of the second half. The Bulls just come out and play flat, and they did, and then they got their ass kicked. I think the most important storyline throughout this game, though, and You know, of course, it comes at the end of the game or even on off the court is we see at the end of the game, Jim Boylan take a timeout. Bulls are down 10 with less than a minute to go. Game is pretty much wrapped up at that point. But then the camera crew catches Zach LaVine and say, we're down 10. Why are you taking a timeout? That leads to a massive storyline post game. What did you think about this? This has been a story that's been building up for a while now. We got a shot of Zach LaVine just a few weeks ago, him mouthing after he hears a timeout over the intercom, Kawhi, after Boylan calls a timeout in a game that's pretty much wrapped up. What do you make of all of this? And I know Zach LaVine has been kind of lighthearted about it. It doesn't seem like he's super pissed off, but at some point, when you're out on the floor and your coach is treating you like college players, and you're supposed to be a star in this league, it's going to be frustrating, especially when you know the game's over. Zach LaVine said it himself. He's like, feels like you're out of rhythm, just kind of disrespectful. At least that's how I feel. You feel like it's kind of disrespectful to your opponents. But according to Jim Boylan, him and LaVine have a great relationship.
Yeah. Well, also, according to Jim Boylan, he's really happy with the systems that he's installed and that there are plenty of accomplishments and plenty of positives to look at this season. According to Jim Boylan, fill in the blank. There's a lot of things that Jim Boylan has said this season that is could be described in no way other than gaslighting. You know, clearly he's gotten pretty good at that. He learns from the best because John Paxson is the president of the Gaslighting Association. But I don't believe for half a second that Boylan and Zach have a solid relationship. The issue last year where Zach was among some players who were ready to walk out on this dude like a week after he took over. And then, oh, it's okay. Like Zach offered to pay Jim's fine when Jim got ejected and had a couple of technicals to pay for. Like, did anyone believe for half a second that that actually meant that they had a solid relationship? Or Jim spending some time visiting Zach out on the West Coast in the offseason? Like, no. Because, I mean, and you just kind of highlighted a second ago, he treats his players like children that need more discipline than they do. And it's apparently the reason that John Paxson and Michael Reinsdorf were in favor of keeping Jim around because they thought that team needed this and that Fred Hoiberg wasn't being enough of a disciplinarian. But it is a players' league. Obviously, it is a coaches' league, too, in the sense that, gee, if the Bulls had a better coach than Jim Boylan, they would probably have at least a handful or so more wins than they do. Because this dude's getting repeatedly out-coached, out-adjusted at halftime. You saw it again in the loss to Phoenix, getting out-maneuvered in fourth quarters of games where they cough up leads. And all that points to, yes, in some ways it is a coach's league and coaching matters. But players are the ones who go out there and play. Players are the ones that win. And, who's taking Jim Boylan's side in this? Other than Jim Boylan and also maybe still, for the time being, Jim's bosses. Because Zach has every right to be ticked off by this shit because it's Bush League. It's not just Zach that's frustrated. Jim Boylan and these unnecessary timeouts late in games that have already been decided. I mean, he's getting called out by broadcasters of other teams. He's getting called out by coaches of other teams. He's annoying coaches and players of other teams. He's getting clowned around the league. So this isn't just Zach being a petulant face of a franchise that's losing and being frustrated. It's not just Zach. It's everyone who thinks that what Jim Boylan is doing is unorthodox and unnecessary.
What, seriously, like, what strategy are you talking? It's a 25-point blowout. There's a minute 4 left.
Teachable
what strategic
moments.
Adjustment are you making?
Teachable
stuck 25? Come on, man. This is just... That's... look. Come on. Really?
You know, the one thing on Jim Boylan, to a fault... I'll say this, I like this about a person, is they're not going to change just because a crowd is yelling at them to change something. This goes for anything in life, you know, not just Jim Boylan. So I will give him a little bit of credit. He sticks to what he thinks is going to be right, even if it's the wrongest thing in the world, at least he's sticking to what he believes in. And it seems like management is kind of on the same page with him, too, is like, if this is the way that you're coaching and this is your style, don't change anything. And for better or for worse, we'll see what the outcome becomes. But like you said, how can this look good to any free agents, any players in the future that want to come here if Jim Boylan's going to be your head coach of the future. You signed him to an extension. How can any player want to come here? Look at, for example, and I know Jim Beilein is not on the same, it's not in the same category as Jim Boylan, although they should, as bottom feeders of NBA coaches. But look at him. As soon as he went into that Cleveland Cavaliers team, he treated all of them like they were in college still. And how fast did that last? Not even a season. Andre Drummond, when he was traded there, basically told them if John Beilein is back next season, I'm out. I won't opt into my contract and I'm out of here. He said this is the worst place, this is worse situation than in Detroit. It's the same thing. I mean, Jim Boylan has different tactics and different ways of going out about being a coach. But if you're treating guys like they don't understand the game of basketball, like seriously, Jim Boylan, what are you teaching guys in the last minute of the game that you feel like is going to be productive? Two times now, I think over the last month, where Jim Boylan's called this timeout to run a play, the Bulls have immediately turned the ball over as soon as they've come out of a timeout. So you're not teaching anything. You're just pissing people off.
Yeah. And shout out to Will Gottlieb, who pointed this out on Twitter just the other day in the wake of all this Boylan Zach timeout beef stuff, because Boylan was saying, well, you know, I'm still going to teach. I'm teaching through the last second of every game. And if, you know, I can understand why maybe that frustrates some people, but I'm going to keep doing this. And my bosses have instructed me to keep doing this, coach all the way through. And we're trying to, you know, build things and teach, you know, teach these kids to play the right way, whatever, whatever. Paraphrasing, but the fact that he cited that game where, well, I took a timeout so I could draw up a play for Adam Makoka, you know, a contract player in the final minute of a game, because Makoka. How often do we get the opportunity to draw up a play for a two-way contract kind of player? And Gottlieb pointed out, guess what? Jim Boylan's Bulls, the worst success rate, the worst points per possession in the NBA in plays, in ATO plays, in after timeout plays. So that, like, he has no leg to stand on to say, well, I'm justified in doing this because these are building moments and these are, you know, instructional moments and they're teaching moments, and I'm going to use all of the opportunities I have and all the timeouts I have to make that happen. Well, guess what, dude? Those plays that you draw up out of timeouts, as you were just alluding to, Jordan, you suck at it. So you're not actually helping these young players.
You're right. Success.
I just don't know where you go from here. I mean, the only thing I will say in Jim Boylan's defense is, like, credit to him is after he got bashed about a few weeks ago, like, real hard with this Toronto game, he came out, like, literally the next game did the same exact thing. So he's not going to stop doing it. I find it very puzzling to figure out why Boylan continues to do this, and he knows he's going to get asked about it every single time. And there's never a really good reason. There's never a good reason, only that you're taking off your best player. Here's Jim Boylan pregame before the Wizards game that I want you guys to hear his explanation about the interaction he had with LaVine right after the game, where he pulled Zach LaVine into a closed room and they had a discussion about it. Here is Boylan on that.
Jim, last night you said that Zach had never conveyed any frustration to you. Did he in that talk, post-game talk last night?
Coach, Jim, you're the coach. If you want to call timeout, you call timeout.
So, I know you can't spend your time on something like this. This is for our, but there is video of him showing yeah. frustration. So, yeah. Do you bring that up to him when you have that talk with him, or how do you approach that?
We didn't even go into that. It's not really about that. You could video me on a 2-on-1 when we turn it over and I make an expression. You could video me on a wide open 3 we miss, and then on the other end they make a contested 3 and I'm like, you know, I make an expression. You could do that on every clip in every situation. We were down 10. I called a timeout to coach my team, and you know, we were down 8, I think, with 40 seconds to go, and Charlotte won. So it does happen, but I can see where people think it'd be unnecessary. That's okay.
Yeah, you're down 8 in Charlotte, and Zach LaVine had to have a career game in order to bring you back, and so did Kobe White. But That's neither here nor there. I get what he's saying too, is like you could put a camera on Jim Boylan's face or any of the players throughout the entire game and probably come up with a dozen clips from every single person that you're videoing throughout a 48-minute game. So I understand that, and maybe it was just bad timing that the cameras caught Levine there right before the timeout, but still, man, he still doesn't give us any good explanation as to why he takes these timeouts, but I guess it's just something that we're going to have to deal with as Jim Boylan being the head coach of the Bulls. Am I right?
Well, yeah, and I don't agree at all with his logic, which is, you know, he's the whataboutism. Like, I swear to God, it sounded like C. Red Fred and some of the arguments he tries to make with, well, yeah, but you could show a video of me looking frustrated after, you know, we screw up a 2-on-1 fast break or after we miss an open three. And hey, it's like him saying, well, you could Photoshop anything to look like anything as a rebuttal for people being like, yo, dude, your best player has been caught on camera multiple times reacting in disgust for things that you do that he deems to be unnecessary and stupid. So being frustrated because the game isn't going the way you want it to, or for missing a shot or for a turnover, has nothing to do with the story of Zach and these frustrating moments of calling timeouts, Jim Boylan, because the story of that is best player on a team that is losing and best player that is sick of losing is publicly undermining and questioning the authority of the head coach. And that's the story that permeates. That's the story that every member of the media was pressing Zach and Jim about after a game that, yes, they lost. Guess what? They always fucking lose. But the bigger story is best player and head coach not getting along. The Bulls have had to deal with this many times in recent years. And maybe not best player, but key player. Because, you know, certain players had their issues with Tibbs. Joakim had an issue with Fred. Then certainly Jimmy had an issue with Fred. Dwayne Wade definitely had an issue with Fred. And here we are again, where one of the Bulls' key pieces has an issue with the way the coach is running things. And it's become public. And it is one of those contributing factors to what John Paxson insists doesn't exist. But if it does, oh, well, there's nothing we could do about it, which is public perception. And that goes back to what you were saying earlier with, if this dude is still here running this team and coaching this team's practices and coaching this team in games, players around the league who respect the talent that is Zach LaVine can look at that and say, why the hell would I want to go play for that guy?
We understand better than anyone.
All right, I think we should, we can switch topics, and I want to get into some of the good that happened over the weekend, because the Bulls did snap. The Bulls did snap their 8-game losing streak.
Didn't even say that without laughing, huh, Jordan?
8-game fucking losing streak. This didn't even really feel like an 8-game losing streak compared to that 10-game losing streak last year. Last year just felt like an absolute beatdown, and maybe it's because it was against a lot worse teams, but we can talk about that in a second, because I do want to get into all of the good things that happened over the weekend, not just Jim Boylan calling dumbass timeouts. But this episode of Locked On Bulls is sponsored by Arizona Tourism. This spring, follow your favorite baseball team to Arizona for Cactus League spring training, amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventures, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. If you're like me and excited about the White Sox season, you can have the first opportunity to see guys like Luis Robert, Nick Madrigal, Yasmani Grandal, and more play in Arizona. If you're not a White Sox or a Cubs fan, there are 10 stadiums, 15 MLB teams, all within 50 miles of Greater Phoenix. It's the perfect place to meet players and get autographs too. Arizona is also known for amazing concert venues for live music and entertainment. You can also explore museums featuring everything from native heritage to modern art to musical instruments from around the world. And of course, you have to check off must-see destinations like the Grand Canyon, Monument Valley, Horseshoe Bend, and Tucson. Arizona's family-friendly, equipped with tons of stuff for kids to do and see, like wildlife parks, science museums, aquariums, and dude ranches. Plan your spring training getaway now. That's at visitarizona.com/springtraining. Visitarizona.com/springtraining. Once again, plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. So, Matt, is this a coming out party for Coby White? The dude, I mean, when he gets hot shooting, it's confidence is through the roof. It's game over. I feel bad for anybody that has to defend him when he gets hot like this. We saw this in Charlotte. It hasn't really come back around. I mean, I guess we saw it against the Grizzlies as well. But these two games back to back, two 33-point games, which are a career high for Coby White, all put on in the same weekend. It's too bad that the Bulls blew the lead on Saturday night. Otherwise, it would have been a perfect weekend for this Bulls team and a nice storyline coming out of All-Star Weekend. But nonetheless, seems like Coby White has kind of turned things around from a little bit of a disappointing rookie year, and who could blame him on this Bulls team? But a fantastic, fantastic weekend for Coby White.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned it's too bad that it couldn't have come in two wins and that they couldn't close it out in Phoenix. One of my big frustrations from that game is that they went away from Coby in that fourth quarter. You know, they had a couple of possessions where, yeah, Zach has been your closer all season. They go to Zach. Zach has a couple of his, you know, untimely turnovers, and I think they came on, if not back-to-back possessions, like two in a span of three possessions where Coby didn't even touch the ball. And then, you know, and Jim was asked about it post game. He said, yeah, we tried to run a couple of things for him in the fourth quarter, but like, no, they didn't. It's like, it was either Zach LaVine turning the ball over, or it was, hell, I can't even remember, you know, it was like Satoransky handling the ball, or you like ran a play where, oh yeah, let's get like a Felicio high screen and roll. And you're like, where is Coby White? Where is he? So it's nice that he had a couple of these games, but you still are frustrated when it doesn't seem like the Bulls recognize, hey, this player's hot. Let that player be hot. Because we haven't seen that many of them, as you said, from Coby. It's been a very trying year, and I'm pretty sure he was one of the many victims of what they call the rookie wall, because he had some pretty dazzling performances early this season, and then he's just, you know, really struggled through these winter months. Maybe he's coming out of it, and we can see him finish the season strong. But he's also just been given more of an opportunity. And I know some Bulls fans are frustrated with the fact that he still hasn't cracked the starting lineup and that Archie's starting over him right now with all these injuries. But hey, he played 34 minutes in that game against Phoenix, and he played another 30-something last night. So to me, at least he's getting the minutes that he should be getting for a rookie who, at this point in the season, is all about letting young players get better.
Yeah, and I would say, too, that this is the first game that I felt like in a while that the Bulls had full command of the game for almost the entirety of it. I know Washington had a lead for the majority of the first quarter, but if I'm not mistaken, I'm looking at ESPN stats right now, or I should say NBAstats.com, and it says the Bulls carried a lead since the back end of the last 2 minutes of the first quarter all the way to the end of the game. So this felt like a kind of a dominating win, and I was kind of surprised by this, especially coming off of a back-to-back, and Bulls don't usually play really well on a back-to-back either. But like you said, and even Zach LaVine said it in post-game, he's like, I understand this. The rest of the team needs to now understand this, that when a guy is hot, we have to go to him. We have to keep feeding him the ball. That's part of what good teams do. Zach LaVine said, and I hope guys, in turn, turn around and do the same thing for me. When I'm hot, I'm hoping guys will give me the ball. And he said, it's not something that I need to learn because I know how to be that type of player. He's like, I learned that growing up. I get it. But other guys on this team need to learn that too. And we all collectively need to learn that when a guy is on fire, when he's absolutely torching it like Coby White was the last two nights, we have to continue to feed him the ball, continue to feed him his confidence. And I'm hoping every single one of these players slowly starts to realize this now, and maybe Zach being a little bit more vocal about it will help. But I think Zach LaVine is right, and sometimes you watch games where the Bulls are up 8, up 10, maybe Zach LaVine has just dropped, I don't know, 20 and a half. And all of a sudden you see guys come out there and trying to take their own shots. I mean, it's like, what are you doing? So I think Zach LaVine collectively wants all these guys to be on the same page as well, and feels like he can be that type of guy to defer to other players when they're hot. And he said it only makes things easier on him. It only makes things easier on him when he's not getting double teamed, when he feels like he's the only scoring option either. So he wants guys to understand when you're having success on the floor, all the other players around him are trying to feed them as well.
Yeah, and there was a moment where it looked like the Bulls might be coughing up another massive lead yesterday against the Wizards. You know, they had a 25-point lead, and the Wizards whittled down to single digits a couple of different times. And one of the stretches where the Bulls were able to kind of fight back and withstand that pressure was when Coby and Zach were on the floor together and had a couple of possessions where they played a little bit of two-man game stuff, and it created a lot of spacing. on the offensive end of the floor that we have not really seen from this multi-ball handler Jim Boylan offense so far this season, where there's a lot of guys standing around and there's not a lot of off-ball movement and there's not a lot of ball movement. But when you have Kobe and Zach together, a lot of those opportunities are suddenly, you know, presenting themselves. And I think, you know, to your point, I completely agree. Zach has just been, you know, so he's so talented that sometimes he can overcome these double teams and he can still score regardless of teams sending two guys at him, sometimes even three guys at him, because there's nothing else around the court that is there to help him. But Kobe is the only player on this roster outside of Zach who can create his own shot. So when you have both of those guys on the floor together, it can open some things up for you. And yeah, you know, big picture, long-term concern, could it be the backcourt of the future? Defensively, Zach LaVine and Kobe White could certainly create some problems for the Bulls. Because, you know, obviously Kobe's very raw defensively, and Zach, to his credit, has gotten better, but he still has some flaws on that end. But even still, it's like, this is an offensive league. It is about outscoring your opponent every night. I mean, look no further than the Wizards, who, you know, before last night's game had at least, you know, one more win than the Bulls do. And they have just been a team all season long that says, to hell with defense. To hell with defense. Let's outscore our opponent every night. And they still didn't manage it with getting 53 for Beal, which, man, kudos to him. What an insane performance. But it's the way of the NBA now. The last time the Bulls were relevant, they were a defense-first team under Tom Thibodeau. That doesn't really exist anymore. You need to be competent defensively. You need to be able to clamp down and get a stop or two when you really need to. But more often than that, it's about outscoring your opponent every night. And Zach and Kobe doing some more of the things that we saw them do last night, that's the best option the Bulls have, at least at their disposal right now with their healthy pieces.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the defensive numbers, too, of like the matchups that the Bulls had last night. Obviously, Zach LaVine and Bradley Beal were paired on each other for most of the nights, and they were the two players that gave up the most points, but Zach had 30-plus, and Bradley Beal had a career high in 53. The more impressive thing was, and I don't know if this is a credit to Kobe White or if it's a credit to Jim Boylan or whoever, but or maybe it's just the team, the bad Wizards team that they're playing, but the matchups Kobe White was served up yesterday, I thought he took advantage of him on both sides. I thought he played pretty decent defense on all the guys that he was matched up against. Then again, we're talking about guys that are first, second, third year players in the league, second rotation players. But Kobe White, I think, did a pretty decent job yesterday of playing defense. And then he picked apart the guys that were on offense. He had a lot of mismatches. And I was thinking he was going to get stopped. Guys like Davis Bertans was on him for a long time, long stretches of time. Troy Brown Jr., who's a second-year player, was on him for a while, but he was picking apart these guys. Different moves, too. We saw different things from Kobe White, whether it was a three, whether it was driving to the basket and finishing and getting an and one, whether it was a step back, and it seems like he started to kind of perfect that nice little jab step and then the little step back that we see from him. He did it three or four times yesterday when he was hot and knocked down all of those shots. So confidence is definitely growing in Kobe.
And defiance of Jim Boylan was pretty efficient in the mid-range game last night, too.
That's true. Yeah, he had one of those really, really nice moves where he stepped in, did a crossover and stepped back and shot over Davis Bertans for a shot. But yeah, you're right. And I think Zach LaVine, too, maybe have noticed that of recently, which Zach LaVine has pretty much gone completely away from the mid-range game as a whole. But it's good to see Kobe White getting to the basket, being able to finish better than maybe he did at the start of the season. The next step, and it's something Zach LaVine is still dealing with in his sixth year of the league, is being able to draw fouls. You know, I feel like Zach LaVine has been the top of conversation for a lot of people over the last couple of weeks. Is he's getting hacked a whole hell of a lot, not getting too many calls. We talked about it last year too, Matt, where it's like Zach's got to be a little bit more creative in the way he's going to be able to draw attention from refs and how to draw those fouls. But I don't know, man. He doesn't get the same level of respect I feel like some other players in this league do.
Yeah, it's true. I think Zach's been definitely getting the short end of the stick from NFL officials all season long. He's really been strong with driving and drawing contact, and a lot of time it's just a no whistle. And it's even, you know, kind of like doubly unfair because refs also seem to be harsh on Zach for the the turnovers. Like, he gets called for traveling every time he travels, and he gets called for stepping on a baseline or stepping on a sideline every time he does that. And it just seems kind of like doubly unfair the way he's treated, because he does play at a star level. He's a guy who's averaging 25 points a game, and yes, he's doing it on a bad team, but fouls are fouls. And this weird unspoken rule and this, you know, this universe we live in where star players get star level treatment from officials and non-star players don't. I mean, the reality is Zach was not an all-star this season. And maybe if he had gotten some of the respect earlier on this season and got more trips to the free throw line and was scoring even more points, and maybe, who knows, that even leads to a few more Bulls wins, he is an all-star. But until he gets that level of respect across the league, he's not going to get that respect from the officials, sadly.
It's disappointing because I feel like he deserves those calls at this point. And I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe if the team is better, he gets better calls. Maybe if he was an all-star, he gets better calls. All of that, I know it sounds petty and it sounds stupid and something that shouldn't factor in to every single game, game in and game out, but that kind of shit does, and it sucks. It sucks for Zach LaVine because he's sitting out there getting hacked by two or three guys, and instead of it being a foul and going to the line, it ends up turning into a turnover. And credit to Zach LaVine, he's not making any excuses for it either. He said, you know, I just got to get it better. He's like, I don't know. He's like, I feel like I do out there, but I can't do anything about it. I just have to improve myself, find ways to get around that. It's an obstacle, and I have to figure out how I can be better and how I can improve, as opposed to just complaining. So I will give him credit for that. He's not blaming anybody. He's not putting excuses on anybody. But you can clearly tell he's pretty frustrated about it, too.
Yeah. You know what else can be frustrating, Jordan?
What's that?
Looking for the right hire. But when you start your hiring process, you may have some questions like, will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants fast. Also, add skills tests to your job post so you can be confident in your applicant's abilities. Their library of more than 50 skills tests ranges from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020.
That's the next step.
Matt, before we get out of here, let's talk quickly about, let's just taking a look at the standings. You know, I was going to say we could raise the white flag, but there's still going to be fans out there talking about potential playoff 8 seed. I mean, the Orlando Magic could have put this away over the last 10 games, but they've been just as bad as the Bulls have been. They're 3-7 over the last 10. The Bulls are 2-8, and the Wizards are 5-5. The Bulls sit five games right now out of the 8th seed, and Washington sits 3.5 back. Both have 20 wins, and Washington has 24 wins. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because I feel like this is reason to talk a little bit about the guys that are currently hurt. Is it advantageous for the Bulls, if they're already out of the race, to bring Lauri Markkanen back to play the last 4 weeks of the season? Is it really advantageous to do that? Is it advantageous to bring Chris Dunn back, even if he is healthy, towards the end of the season, the last 2 or 3 weeks? The Bulls are already out of it. Might as well sit him to the end of the season, keep him completely healthy. Same thing with Markkanen. That's how I feel, though. I know some other Bulls fans will push back and say, no, we need to get these guys out on the floor. They need to play minutes together. I don't even care if it's meaningless minutes like it was last year. We got to see what we have, even though it might be meaningless games. But in turn, if the Bulls end up going, I don't know, 500 over the next 10 games and stay within, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 games of that 8 seed, I think we see Markkanen come back, and Chris Dunn's going to be an interesting one, man. We haven't talked about his contract a whole lot, but it goes back to the whole Ryan Arcidiacono thing we talked about last year. You know, qualifying offer, and in order to qualify for a higher qualifying offer, he had to play a certain amount of games as a starter. The Bulls tried to kind of maneuver around that so they could get him at a lower deal. It seems like Chris Dunn's in that same boat this year, too, where I think his qualifying offer this summer, if he has a certain amount of starts, is, what, $7.6 million? And then if he doesn't, it drops down to somewhere around $3 or $4 million. So I'm going to be very curious to watch this over the next month and a half or so.
Yeah, well, and with Chris, it sounds like that may not even be an issue because the timeline we got most recently on an update was, you know, it sounded like another 4 to 6 weeks before reevaluation. And then you talk about after that, getting on the practice floor, full contact practice, and then still more steps between that and being actually game ready. So I don't think Dunn's timeline has him coming back. As for the other pieces like Wendell and Lowry and Otto, I'm sorry, I just don't see what Paxson meant when he was talking at deadline day about like, well, we got to see what we have and we got to use these final stretch of games where we get guys back and healthy to evaluate. Guess what, dude? As long as Jim Boylan is your coach, none of that shit matters because you were losing games with all those. Yeah, Otto went down early, but other than that, for the first half of the season, you were losing games with Lowry healthy, but playing poorly, with Wendell healthy, but, you know, modest performance from him. How does any of that change knowing that Jim Boylan is so stubborn that he doesn't actually plan on changing anything? He says he's not going to reinvent the wheel. That's Jim Boylan speak for, I don't really know what I'm doing, so I'm not going to change the one thing that I think I know that I'm doing. So getting guys back, it doesn't accomplish anything as long as they're playing in Jim Boylan's broken system. And it's not about tanking to me for the sake of like draft lottery standings tanking, because we know that this is a pretty weak draft class coming up. And yeah, in a weak draft class, it's still better picking first than seventh. You want to increase your odds as best you can. But it's not about that. It's more about what you were saying, which is why risk injury to any of these guys if you do plan on keeping this core intact and maybe making some front office changes and maybe making a coaching change and seeing if you can try again next season with some of these same pieces that are around. Do not risk hurting any of them in completely meaningless games. Games that you cannot use to advance yourself this season at all. All you can do is put yourself on a step back if you're dealing with not having players going through healthy offseason regimens.
And I think that's even more so true, too, if the Bulls are completely out of it. I get it if you're battling two games out of an eighth seed and you're 10 games out of 500.
Have you looked at their schedule, though?
Like, I have.
I know that they have a couple more winnable ones to finish out February, but they got 24 games left. Your buddy Jeff Mangerton over at 670 pointed this out earlier today. Of those 24 remaining Bulls games, only six are against teams currently not in the playoff picture.
Yikes.
How the hell are the Bulls climbing all the way back from five games back at the eight seed right now? It's impossible.
Yeah, that's not good. I was going to say even for short term, you could look over the next 10 games because the Magic and the Bulls meet March 12th. And that would be kind of a game where I would pinpoint, all right, then that's where you look at the standings. Because over the next 10 games, the Orlando Magic have kind of a difficult schedule. They play Minnesota twice, which would be kind of easy, I guess, because they're missing Cat. But you got the Rockets, you got Memphis, you got Portland, San Antonio, and you have Brooklyn and Atlanta. And most of these games are on the road. I believe the Magic play, let's see, six of those nine games on the road. So I hate to say it, Matt, but I feel like we're going to get to Thursday, March 12th when the Magic are coming here to Chicago and the Bulls are only going to be still two, three, four games out of this. And we're still going to be talking about it mid through March. But I'm with you too, though. You know, what evaluation are you going to have on these guys in the last 3 or 4 weeks of the season? Most of the teams that you're going to be playing that are playoff teams that maybe don't need to be fighting for seeding anymore are going to be playing their scrubs. What can you evaluate with your starters playing up against scrubs? We clearly saw that doesn't work. Last year, we touted February as amazing. It was great to see this type of turn in this evaluation. What turned out, that was a crack of shit. It was a bunch of teams that were underperforming, that were going through a February slump, trying to rest guys. It was a mirage. What we saw in February last year, I feel like, was a mirage. And I don't want to get tricked again for an entire summer talking about 1 month of basketball, hoping that's going to turn into an entire season, which it clearly didn't happen this year. So I don't want to be tricked again. And so with that, I'm with you. Keep everybody healthy. If you clearly feel like this team's done, it's over, we're not going to try to make the playoffs, we want another lottery pick, then sit your guys. Don't bring them back when they're 90% healthy. Let them sit. Let them get fully healthy, especially your core piece in Markkanen. And another guy you're going to owe $27 million that hasn't stepped on the floor for less than 10 games this season in Otto Porter. Let those both those dudes get healthy. If this is truly the team you want to figure out if you can win with or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of sad to think that that's the reality of the situation, and it's also worrisome in knowing that I don't, you know, we are still just only pontificating about what exactly these changes are that are rumored to be happening with the front office. But if that does not include finally overhauling this team's medical staff, I don't know, other than to, like, you know, burn some sage in the Advocate Center. Like, what are you going to do to lift this curse of not ever having a healthy roster? Because Bulls fans hate when they use injuries as an excuse. And this season in particular, it can't be an excuse because they were primarily healthy for most of that, you know, large part of the season heading into the All-Star break before people started to go down one by one. And they were still a bad losing team. Still, though, you look ahead to next season saying, all right, this season's a lost cause. This season's a wash. Let's focus on keeping guys healthy. And it's like, what should Bulls fans have to look to as a reason for optimism and a reason to believe that we'll finally have ourselves a season where our key players stay healthy? It's sad that it just doesn't seem. I'm just sitting here right now thinking about, you know, who will it be next year? Which ones of them will it be next year? Because I can't remember the last time this team had a healthy roster. And that's awful. But I think even knowing that there is that pessimism related to keeping this roster healthy and all of the injury problems that this organization has had in this last stretch of years, you still have to do everything you can. You still have to optimize the likelihood that you come into your next season and a fresh start with as many healthy bodies as possible.
I'm with you, man. I mean, we're lucky it's not Zach, and I'm knocking on wood doing everything that I can to not jinx it, but I mean, where would this team be if it was Zach? If this was all this injury problems were happening to our best player, this team would be even a bigger dumpster fire than it is right now. But I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails. We'll get to everything on Wednesday. So make sure if you want to get onto the show, you want to ask your question, you want to just unleash some thoughts about this Bulls team over the next 6 weeks, you know the place to do that. That's 331-979-1369. I want to thank our sponsors for today's show. That's Indeed and Arizona Tourism. If you want to plan your spring training getaway, make sure you get to visit arizona.com/springtraining. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Felicio to the rim, put up an air ball.
Fantastic.